Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason. Wait, you're not Jason. What's happening?
No, I'm not Jason. I am Micah.
You're the one and only Micah Sargent. You're filling in.
Yeah, where is Jason?
Jason is on assignment, as we always say, which means he's on vacation. No, he's on the other side of the world. He's down in New Zealand. Basically as far away as he could possibly get from us. So good for him. I hope that means he's taking an actual break.
Yeah, that's good. You got to take those breaks, and when you take them, actually take them, right?
Right.
A lot of people, they bring all that stuff with them, and they end up working the whole time, and then you don't really get that break. It's not great.
It's not good. I like taking vacations, but I don't get to do it very often anymore. Although I am taking a vacation in a few weeks. So this is news to you, Micah, but I am taking a vacation in a few weeks. Only for a week. You'll have to, someone will fill in for me.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Fine. That's good, though. When you say vacation, mm-hmm. does that mean vacation with child or
yes.
vacation without
child? No, okay. With the whole family is going.
Wow.
We'll see. It's going to be an adventure. We haven't really traveled at all. We went one night to my in-laws over Thanksgiving, and it was semi-disastrous because we had never really traveled before with the kid, and we're like, oh, gosh, what's happening? He was unhappy with he had to be in a different place, and he wasn't sure how to deal with that. I mean, he was also only 4 months old or something at the time. So by the time he's 8 months old, he'll be a seasoned traveler. Everything will be great. And I assume this will all be very smooth. So yeah.
Start him young, right?
That's right. Well, if my wife has anything to say about, and she does because she's in charge. All right. So some minor Apple stuff this week. Mostly a pretty quiet week. I mean, it's February. We don't get a lot of news in February. But one thing that came up, and I know you were looking into this as well, is this report from Mark Gurman saying that the Apple's working on a moonshot project to do continuous non-invasive blood glucose testing. Potentially, I guess, long term for the Apple Watch, although it seems like that's super long term at this point.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I thought this was an interesting idea, but it's not really surprising. You said they've been working out for like a decade.
It's from the Steve Jobs era.
Yeah.
It's been around a while. And so Mark Gurman came on Tech News Weekly yesterday. And so I had a chance to talk to him about this piece. And one of the things that was kind of most fascinating to me is what we're talking about here, how long the company has been working on this. They had kind of set up a directive that they wanted to do blood glucose monitoring, and they, got the wheels spinning, put everything in place to make that happen. And then, as always happens, people leave the company, things change, and they also wanted to kind of continue to maintain a level of secrecy around this product. So they ended up sort of having a company that does not technically exist under Apple's bandana or umbrella. I mean, be the
I like that. A ba- that I like a bandana.
It's a bandana.
It's a six colored bandana. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they have this company that it's got what amount to Apple engineers and Apple folks working at it. But the company badges, all that kind of stuff are for this company. And I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Oh, yeah. I had some very anonymous, we're just an ordinary health tech company, pay no mind to us.
That's exactly it. Don't ask any questions. And I think the big reason for that is because anytime you're dealing with health stuff, you have to have human beings involved in the process at some point.
Right.
And so to have these folks who are coming in, both people who weren't sure if they had, if they were diabetic, people who had who were pre-diabetic, and then people who were type 2 diabetic or what have you, all coming in and having these tests done and working through this. And so that way it wasn't like, oh yeah, I'm going down to Apple to do this. And it had that separation for them.
Yeah. I find this fascinating. I mean, it makes a lot of sense that obviously on the health tech side, this is a big thing because it's a metric that many people already have to measure and keep track of, and people already use technological devices to do that, right? Whether it's as simple as the blood, fingertip prick, blood monitoring, or some of these more advanced ones that do continuous monitoring. It seems like a place that's kind of ripe, but it's also extremely hard from what it sounds like.
Yeah. Incredibly difficult. In fact, so yeah, capillary tests are one of the most common tests that folks will do at home if they don't have a CGM, a constant glucose monitor. And even many of the CGMs are, they have to be replaced after a while as well. So it's not as if it's this thing that you can just have. And Google had attempted to do something similar using, because they said, oh, we've got these little droplets from our eyes,
tears,
that we could test and be able to find all sorts of stuff, including glucose. And so they had worked on contacts. There are some companies who are using urine to do different tests. But what Apple is looking at is something that's very, very close to our blood, which is, it's a fluid, which everybody loves that word, I know, but it is a, it's a fluid that kind of exists in between the spaces in our body. And so that fluid, I think it might even be called interstitial fluid. It has a lot of the information that you would need to determine how much glucose is in the body at a given time. And what's kind of magical about this is that they can use lasers, and algorithms to try to measure glucose. Because if you look at the way that the light or the laser is either absorbed or not absorbed by this interstitial fluid, that can give some insight into how much glucose is in the body. And I think
it's wild.
That's so wild, so scientific, and so Star Trek to me. It's just, it's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that fascinates me about this too, is that it really feels even more so than the health stuff that Apple's already done on the Apple Watch, like something that is going to make a huge potential difference for people's lives, right? Because it's so critical to so many people, right? So much of the stuff that's in there already is stuff that's like, oh, it's interesting diagnostic stuff. It's stuff that's nice to know, or it's stuff that, you know, in the cases of things that really are like emergency situations, right? Like the AFib detection, you know, stuff that you're not necessarily anticipating, but like is useful when it comes up. Whereas this is much more targeted at stuff where it's like, look, we know people with ongoing conditions have to deal with this, and we're going to provide better tools to monitor that information and to help you make decisions based on it. But it's also tricky because it's like legit health tech now.
Life or death, yeah.
Right. Like you can't have that, can't mess up at all, right? It's not like, well, you know, it's accurate 99.99% of the time. You're like, that's still too many times that it's not accurate potentially if it means somebody's gonna get like seriously hurt.
Yeah. And that, I mean, what was also fascinating to me, or not fascinating, but what stood out to me in the piece, Mark says roughly 1 in 10 Americans are diabetic. That is a huge swath of the population that is perhaps doing those capillary tests. And just to get to a point where there's less pain involved with something that you have to do. And I know after a while for a lot of folks who are diabetic, the pain kind of is just way down the line in terms of their concern. But just thinking about having to do that every day, it does feel a little barbaric, right? Like, this is the future. We live in this huge tech world. Why are people still having to stab their fingers in order to maintain their health day to day? It's kind of wild.
Yeah, no, I'm fascinated to see how this progresses. It's also fascinating to me, you mentioned like the 1 in 10 figure. And I know that specifically calls out Americans, but I also feel like this is a very American focused gadget. Yes, diabetes obviously exists worldwide, but it does certainly seem like the American market is perhaps a big market for that.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm interested. I really am interested about the regulatory aspect of this, because I think it is fascinating to watch Apple move from stuff that is self-described as like, you can't use this. It's a medical quote unquote sensor, but you can't use it for medical things, right? The blood oxygen meter had, you know, that disclaimer posted on it when they added that to the Apple Watch. And I think also, you know, they've been sort of cagey with the EKG thing, right? And like what it can and can't detect. They have to be very specific. So for all of that, it feels very much like, look, we want to move into this area, but we're also being extremely tentative about how we do it. And this would be something that if they can actually get it working, you know, will be way, you know, like it's going to, there's no question about it at that point. It's,
I honestly highly, highly doubt that they will ever let it be a recommendation for folks who, have a, you know, fully malfunctioning or inoperable, or not inoperable, but, non-operating pancreas. Mm-hmm. In other words, type 1 diabetics, I doubt that they're ever going to recommend it for that group. And it's the same thing as like with the Apple Watch. Only recently do they have kind of AFib, actual AFib,
right,
as something that you can track. I don't even see, I mean, unless we get, again, to some true Star Trek future where it can be accurate 100% of the time and it can communicate with somebody's pump on their body that helps them get insulin. I only see this being used for people who, I can go into San Francisco and I can walk around and, in the same way that, like, at one point we started, whenever the AirPods first came out, you started to see them crop up everywhere. I see everybody with CGMs, constant glucose monitors, on their arms. And that, I understand, I know, 1 in 10 Americans, but it is in vogue right now, especially in the tech area where everybody's trying to, you know, always hack their bodies as much as they're trying to hack everything else, doing that constant glucose monitoring. So, whether you are just curious about your glucose levels on its own, you're pre-diabetic, or you have type 2, I think all of those groups could benefit from something like this. And, you know, just personally, I think it would be cool to be able to track that. But Mark seems to think 10 years.
Yeah.
He said it's past the stage of just being a moonshot. He said, right now it's, you know, they're looking at trying to shrink it down more and more and more because it's involved some chips and stuff. So,
right. That's another interesting part, just from a sort of a consumer tech side, is the idea you mentioned, like the prototypes are now something that's the size of an iPhone that you can strap to your arm, as opposed to being the size of like a table before, apparently, or having to be on a table. I'm intrigued to try and figure out whether they would include this in the watch or whether it might exist as an accessory, like a health tech that pairs with your watch, for example, to do some of the heavy lifting. Because I'm sure they'd love to get it in the watch. It's just a question of, is that feasible? And how does that, like, maybe, you know, is there more of a market for somebody who's like, well, you can get the watch, but then as a separate add-on, you know, to make it more reliable or something, and to help control price a little bit, right? Because, like, maybe a function of, for those people who really need it, might be willing to spend, you know, a couple hundred bucks on, like, an accessory, as opposed to, you know, many people might be like, well, I don't need that right now.
Why'd you put it in and make it more expensive?
And make it more expensive. Yeah. So I'm intrigued to see how that, it might be a branching out to some more, like, not only health tech, but wearable tech as well. Like, there's an interesting overlap there between stuff that, like, helps monitor you and is also, like, a wearable device.
It would be cool to see some first party, like, full on health tech from Apple. I mean, they've purchased some different companies in the past, but kept the name, like Beddit, the sleep tracker. That belongs to Apple, but they never have made it the Apple.
Are they still tracker. Working on that actively?
I don't think they're still. I honestly, 100%, I have no clue as far as that goes. But I know it was, last I looked, it was still in the Apple.
Yeah, I don't think they've like made a new version or anything. It seems like they used some of the people to work on the sleep tracking stuff on the watch, I think.
The algorithms and that kind of thing, I think, is what they wanted out of that. But it would be cool to see. Oh, and it doesn't even appear that they've got it in the store anymore.
Yeah, I thought it might have been discontinued, but I wasn't sure. Like, because I know it was still there for a while after they acquired it, even though they didn't acknowledge at all that it was like an Apple device. Just like, oh, this other device that it's fine. You can pick that up if you're really into sleep stuff. But I'll be interested to see what else comes out of this, but that seems like it's certainly like the glucose tracking seems like it's kind of the holy grail at this point.
Absolutely. And it looks like, according to Gurman, the next kind of big jump we'll see in Apple Watch technology is, as far as health goes, is blood pressure, because the company is looking at, and I said, so is it going to be like an inflatable wristwatch that you put on?
Yeah, I can just picture that. That's a weird conversation. You're just sitting there in a meeting, and all of a sudden your watch starts inflating. Like, that feels weird.
And it'd be great for fall detection, too. You can throw out your arm.
That's right. Oh, God. Oh, thank God. The airbag has deployed.
But he said, no, the way that they're doing it is similarly in this idea of looking at how light is absorbed or refracted to determine glucose. They can also sort of micro image the capillaries and look at the way that the blood rushes into those wow. zones, and then throw that into an algorithm and determine blood pressure from that, which again is like, this is the stuff where it all feels like we're very close to just cracking so many codes. You know, if you can then go to the periodic table of elements and determine sort of refractory and light absorption and all that stuff, and then apply it to these devices we wear, then suddenly I know how much of, you know, during the day when I'm eating different nutrients, I can get a picture of what nutritional intake I have. And it's mind-boggling. Yeah,
the fascinating thing about it too, for me, from a technology perspective, is how much of this is driven by what is in existence, right? The fact that we're like, okay, we have a device that we strap to your forearm. It lets us shoot lights through because we have access to your wrist. Therefore, we're going to figure out how to develop technology based on that. Like, the form factor has driven the innovation to a certain degree, because they have to figure out, rather than just being like, okay, you're now festooned with sensors like all over your body for different things you're wearing. It's like, no, we've got a watch, and how do we make this stuff work with a watch? I mean, to your point, like the Google working on the contact lenses and stuff like that, I think that's, you know, interesting too, because it's also like, okay, well, we can get stuff from tears, so now we can make a contact lens. Like, that's sort of driving the other way around. Like, we know we can get it from this, so can we do a measurement using, can we create a device that can get that? But that's a harder sell too, right? Because like, anybody who doesn't wear contacts is probably going to be maybe not as excited about like sticking stuff in their eyes.
To put them in. I think that's why they discontinued that whole moonshot project, was A, they realized that folks were not going to be interested in putting contacts in their eyes if they don't already wear contacts. And B, the technology, it just wasn't there. They, of course, again, were using tears as opposed to interstitial fluid, which did not have as much of a correlation, they found, as interstitial fluid did. So that led to them kind of going, okay, this is not where we want to go. And what you touched on that point there about, you know, they have this thing on the wrist, so they're using this sort of form factor that they've already got. That reminds me of, in comparison, I think early on, what made Amazon's virtual assistant so great was the fact that it was a no display tube microphone and speaker. And so it needed to be able to communicate without needing to punt to showing you something on a screen.
Right.
And so they really had to dial that in and make sure that experience was able to be, you know, it could answer most of your questions without saying, here's what I found on the web for you.
Yeah.
And in that way, I think that kind of hurt Siri, because it did become a less helpful assistant. So I like that comparison there, whenever we think about, you know, you've got this thing and now you're building everything around it, and also building to the limitations that are here,
right,
and the potential strengths, like what I think is around the corner. If I can already, and I, you know, I'm not the first person to say this, I know, but the Apple Watch's accessibility mode that has the ability to tell the difference between a fist or some fingers, then that is so clearly a method by which we could control a future AR, VR headset. It just, it lines up so perfectly, and I love that.
So much of what they've talked about with that is like, it's not going to have any physical controls, right? It's going to do hand tracking for everything, is sort of the rumor that's out there. And I think, the Apple Watch does demonstrate how you could do that. And in that case, it's even just using the sensors inherent in the watch, right? Not even using, I think for the AR headset, it's also rumored to be like camera tech and actually using that as well. But certainly having, I think for the sort of wearable market especially, I think there's always been this idea of like a constellation of devices that would all be sort of work together to create something larger than the whole. And it does feel like something like the AR headset is a part of that. Although I also have to wonder, like, how, if, you know, it's like, oh, well, it works great without an Apple Watch, but if you have an Apple Watch, it works even better, which feels very much like an Apple pitch.
Right.
Like, but also, 100%. You're like, you're going to spend $3,000 on a headset and then you got to spend another $500 on a watch. That feels like a... It's like,
but
when they were,
got it, Dan.
I know, you're there, you go, you're halfway to that $3,000 headset already. I mean, like, that was the thing they were rumoring for a while with the it was like talking about, like, oh, it doesn't have any headphones, which I've heard is bunk, but like there are people like, oh, well, you'll have to get AirPods or something, and people are like, really, we have to buy AirPods to go with this?
You go into the store and they're like, could I interest you in a pair of AirPods to go with?
Otherwise you can, you really enjoy this very quiet headset experience where there's nothing much going on.
Can you imagine?
As for other stuff going on this week, to give a preview of my Macworld column coming out next week, I spent some time writing about AI, which obviously everybody's talking about. Everybody's talking about AI and ML. I saw the there was the story this past week or two that was talking about Apple's AI summit or whatever, their little meeting inside Apple where they're like, have everybody come talk about their artificial intelligence,
yes,
which is a thing they apparently have been doing on the regular for a long time. But I saw an article that, and I won't disclose where I saw it, but I framed it very much as like, Apple fails to announce AI competitor to ChatGPT and Bing, and you're like, come on, man.
Come on.
But I think it's fascinating because Apple has spent a lot of time talking about AI, except using the term machine learning, which depending, even that is kind of fuzzy. I was doing some like looking around for this article and like, yes, it's sometimes considered a subset of artificial intelligence, but it's also sometimes used largely interchangeably because a lot of the AI stuff that we're dealing with now is machine learning stuff. That's the subset of AI that a lot of these neural net models and stuff are using, is learning, machine learning technology. So Apple has spent a ton of time talking about machine learning, right? Like, and I think what's interesting about it is the approach it takes is very different from like what ChatGPT or Bing, you know, the chatbot have done. It's not a thing where you interact directly with it so much.
Exactly.
It's a tool that they use to do other stuff. So when people talk about like, oh, Apple's behind because they haven't shipped a chatbot yet, it's like, guys, they're doing so much with artificial intelligence and like machine learning.
The photography.
Photography especially.
What
vision stuff.
Without, yeah.
Yeah.
Any of the sort of behavioral understanding that the phone gets after a while, which I know some folks do not like a lot of that, but I mean, that is all happening by way of machine learning and just optimizations in the system overall. Mm-hmm. We continue to see not just Apple, but many companies, many manufacturers who have realized that machine learning, AI, blah, 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 can make such a difference when it comes to how a computer processes and transcodes a video, for example.
Right.
Kind of magnificent. And I just think that because all that stuff is arguably boring to the everyday person, then they don't make that super clear. But I wonder if all of this attention that ChatGPT and these generative technologies are getting, if that's going to lead to more of a mention at the next press event, if we'll see more talk about what AI and ML have to do.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting. A lot of people obviously have commented about like Siri being something that could potentially benefit from that. And, you know, very clear to like, oh, they've got a chatbot. Apple sort of has a chat interface or a virtual assistant interface. And I think there's definitely stuff from the way that we've seen these chatbots interact that Siri would benefit from, like especially stuff like context. Siri's still not great at like, you want to be like, oh, turn that light on. No, not that light, the other light. You know, you want to have a conversation that feels very human, and that is something that it actually does really well, is like it understands, oh, this thing that you asked me about 2 seconds ago is a thing that I remember, not like Siri's like, Siri's like that, you know, like the Mayfly or whatever. It's like,
the
nope, I'm dead. that's gone. That person is dead that you were talking to. I'm a new Siri every time.
Just constantly going through the transporter. Brand new Siri every time.
But yeah, there's cool stuff I think it can get out of that. But I mean, you know, obviously you look at some really impressive features Apple's debuted over the last couple of years, like live text. For example, that's all machine learning, right? Like, it's clear that they're invested in this.
I did not realize, it took me a while. If you tap in iOS or wherever, if you are in a text field and you tap and hold for like the paste menu, copy paste.
Oh yeah,
menu,
you get the scan text button.
You get the scan text button. And this, just the other day, my partner was in contact with the dealership for something that needs to get fixed with his vehicle. And he said, hey, could you send me the VIN?
Yeah.
Or could you send me a photo of the paper that has the VIN on it? And I was like, I'll do you one better. And I went over and I hit that scan button and pulled it right up and was able to drop that text in. That is such a clever feature. And, you know,
so good.
What I found is that I have used it more than I even, because the first time I tried it, I was like, oh, this is cool. Don't think it's going to come up that much. But there are times when I just need some text from something super quick.
And especially if it's so cool, it's like a serial number or something where it's like, oh God, I'm going to type this very carefully and I might hit the wrong key because I'm looking at the thing and typing it. And all of that feels huge. I tried to use it the other day. It did not work great for this, but I had this, like, one of the apps on my Apple TV keeps getting logged out, and it does the thing where it's like, go to this URL and put in this 6-digit code. I'm like, can I just hold my phone up and point it at the screen and just grab it instead of having to go type it? Didn't work great at that distance, but it was still like, felt like this is a problem that we should be able to solve with better technology instead of having me go to a website and type in a random series of characters.
And some websites or apps that don't make the text that's on screen selectable. I'll just do a quick screenshot and grab the text that way if I need it.
That was pointed out to me as a thing for I wrote up the last week the how to add two-factor authentication for Twitter because of the two-factor changes to the built-in system on iOS and macOS. And I said, it's weird. Something, the way Twitter is generating its QR code when it asks you to set up is strange because you normally can tap and hold on a QR code and it will offer to set it up. But if for some reason, it wasn't recognizing it. And it had several people, including Ricky Mondello, suggest, like, take a screenshot and then open the QR code from your photos. And apparently that works just fine. And it's like, yeah, all right, I don't know what Twitter's doing, but apparently we can make an end run around that. So that's a nice feature as well.
Yeah, I think that stuff is very smart. And even the, I've been very impressed with the subject cutout feature.
Oh, yeah.
It is much better than I would expect something like that to be. And even better than some online services that are completely devoted to cutting out a subject. For folks who are going, what is he talking about? If you have a photo with, you know, a person in it or a dog in it or something, and it's, you know, the background is clearly separated from the foreground, you can tap and hold on the photo and it will kind of do the sheen over the top of the photo and then it lifts the subject out of the photo and then you can have that cut out. Now, it's not often that I need this feature. I'm not often trying to do cutouts, but it is cool that it is there, and as good as it is, that's what's been impressive to me. And it was interesting, Apple has posted a few times on its Instagram, it had commissioned some artworks using this feature specifically. Hmm. And so there was a collage artist who had created these really cool collages built out of, you know, the subject of the photo, and it was the artist was just using that lift subject feature for each of the photos.
Yeah, I will say I sometimes, my biggest frustration with that feature is I trigger it by accident when I'm trying to do a live photo.
Yes.
Because you have to just not press on the subject, like tap and hold somewhere else. But it is a very cool and weird, like, I don't even know why they decided to do that. It struck me as one of those features when they announced it. It's like, oh, we just realized because we're doing all that depth modeling for like portrait mode and stuff like this. We already know how to identify a subject. Well, why might as well make this thing? So yeah, I've definitely used it. It is mostly for sending weird like pictures to friends. It's like, oh, I build out this picture. Now it's a picture of you, but with no background. I've made you a sticker.
Yeah, there have been a few times where, you know, maybe the space where the dog is standing behind, you can see that I did not pick up the toys there's off the ground or something. And so it's just like, oh, I want to show you my dog, but not my messy dog toy area. Well,
that's good. That's a good tip for the, yeah, having a kid with always in the background, lots of toys and other crud.
It's like, wow, for some reason, every photo that Dan sends to me, the kid is on top of just a plain blue background. That's I wonder how he does that. He's lifting the subject.
Lives in a blue room. That's what it is. It's like Johnny Ives' white room, but now it's just blue. It's good for special effects, too.
There you go.
All right. Well, you know, we've chatted for about half an hour, which is the time that Mike and I are used to chatting in, is roughly half an hour. So this is a nice change where it's like no other people interrupting us. We can actually
just us.
It's the distilled version of Clockwise, which is, of course, the podcast where you can catch us over at Relay FM. I will be back next week with another guest who I haven't figured out yet, but it will be possibly as exciting as Micah, probably not as exciting as Micah, let's be honest.
Oh, come on. Now I feel bad for him.
It'll be John Moltz. Everybody knows.
Very exciting.
Well, thank you everybody out there, Six Color Memberships, for supporting the site. We really appreciate it. And of course, you can read more at sixcolors.com. You can check out Micah's work over at Twit and at Clockwise. All that sort of good stuff. And
Chihuahua.coffee, chihuahua.coffee. That's my URL that has the different places I am online.
And most importantly, you can go hear us play Dungeons and Dragons on Total Party Kill over The Incomparable. That's the most important part. Everybody knows it.
Indeed.
Well, everybody out there, thanks for listening again. And until next week, bye, Micah.
Keep watching the clock. Oh, wait. Bye.